Good morning, this is your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster, Cicely Tiernan with today's Wall Street Journal. Senator Lindsey Graham backs underground strike of Iran's Fordow site. By Timothy Martin. Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican, South Carolina, advocated for a deep underground strike in Iran's Fordow uranium enrichment facility, appearing to suggest that the U.S. give Israel the extra firepower. In a social media post, Graham, a top Trump ally, said Fordow must be dealt with through a type of strike that only America has the capability to carry out, a likely reference to the U.S.'s giant bunker buster bomb. Go all in, Graham wrote, finish the job. China prepares to evacuate citizens from Israel. By Clarence Leung. China is planning to evacuate citizens from Israel and send them in groups southward to the border with Egypt, beginning Friday, the country's embassy in Israel said. The embassy said, there is huge uncertainty in how the situation may evolve, and further deterioration cannot be ruled out. On Tuesday, Chinese leader Xi Jinping called for de-escalation of the conflict and said Beijing is opposed to any act that infringes on other countries' sovereignty. Meanwhile, China in recent days has pulled out roughly 800 nationals from Iran with expectations to evacuate more than 1,000 others. U.S. News. Inside one man's journey to Mexico for addiction treatment with a psychedelic. Ibogaine has been touted for its potential to erase years of addiction and withdrawal in one session. Banned in the U.S., the drug is prompting Americans to cross borders for treatment. By Alexander Hotz. Desperate to break free from addiction, thousands of Americans hooked on opioids are heading to Mexico for a radical and risky treatment banned in the U.S. The African root is a powerful psychedelic that can wipe out withdrawals and cravings in just one dose, but it isn't without danger. Ibogaine can induce traumatic visions and cause fatal heart complications. Kyle DeMonzo took that risk. After 20 years of drug use, his veins were so damaged that doctors had to surgically insert a catheter into his heart to detox him for the treatment. Still, DeMomoso believes it was worth it if it means he can finally get clean. Markets and finance. JGB edge higher amid Middle East tensions. JGBs edge higher in price terms amid Middle East tensions that typically support the safe haven allure of government debt. Investors may also closely monitor the Japanese finance ministry's auction today of about $2.4 trillion of five-year sovereign notes for any signs of investor demand. Expectations for BOJ rate increases are unlikely to strengthen, SMBC's Nikko Securities Lisa Mochizuki says, citing factors including Governor Ueda's press conference earlier this week. However, supply-demand dynamics work against five-year JGBs, the junior analyst said in a note. The five-year auction is expected to produce rather weak results, the junior analyst adds. The 10-year JGB yield is down 1 BP at 1.445%. Asian investors seem to have lost appetite for the dollar. Asian appetite for the dollar has diminished significantly. DBS Forex and credit strategist Cheng Wei Liang writes in a note, currencies of Asian countries with significant holdings of U.S. assets are showing the most strength against the dollar, he says. Many Asian investors are now looking at either hedging their dollar risks or diversifying into non-dollar assets, he adds. Investments back into Singapore and Hong Kong have already led to large decline in short-term Singapore dollar and Hong Kong dollar rates, he notes. Yet the U.S. dollar remains highly overvalued despite broad selling since the April reciprocal tariff announcement. Baht weakens amid turmoil in Thailand's ruling coalition. The baht weakens in morning Asian session amid turmoil in Thailand's ruling coalition government. Thai Prime Minister Prayut Garwin-Shinawatra faces political fallout after a leaked phone call between her and Cambodia's former leader, Hun Sen, related to the border dispute between the two countries. CIMB research analysts say in a commentary, the knock-on effect has been that Bumjathai, the second largest party in the coalition, is withdrawing from the government. This leaves the government with a slim majority, and there are worries over political stability, the CIMB analysts add. USD to THB rises 0.4% to 34.79. Asian currencies consolidate as traders assess Fed's hawkish tone, Middle East tensions. Asian currencies consolidate against the dollar as traders assess the Fed's hawkish tone and ongoing Middle East tensions. The FOMC statement and Fed Chair Powell's remarks overnight indicate deepening worry over inflation despite signs of economic slowdown. Meanwhile, the Israel-Iran conflict has continued, with Israel's military saying it struck more than 20 military targets in and around Tehran. USD/KRW is little changed at 1,376.34 over Australian dollar to U.S. dollar, edges 0.1% lower to 0.6502. U.S. dollar to Singapore SGD is steady at 1.2856. Asian stocks fall on Fed Middle East concerns. Futures tied to U.S. indices were in the red, by Kimberly Cow. Asian stock markets fell Thursday, tracking U.S. futures as investors weighed concerns about inflation in the U.S. and potential escalation in Middle East tensions. Japan's Nikkei stock average declined 0.8% and South Korea's KOSPI was 0.5% lower. Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index fell 0.95%, while China's Shanghai Composite Index was 0.3% lower. Futures tied to U.S. indices were in the red. Dow futures were down 0.2%, while S&P 500 and NASDAQ futures fell 0.2% and 0.4% respectively. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell on Wednesday projected confidence when he insisted the central bank was in a good position to handle whatever the economy does next, but acknowledged that the Fed has little idea what's actually coming. We haven't been through a situation like this, and I think we have to be humble about our ability to forecast it, Powell said. While the Fed's decision to retain the status quo was widely expected, the key context is that more Fed members now see fewer rate cuts this year, reflecting their expectations for elevated and persistent uncertainty, Vishnu Varathan of Mizuzu Securities said in a note. Economic projections show officials expect U.S. inflation and unemployment to rise this year by more than they projected in March. Still, markets seem less fussed about the Fed decision and more concerned about geopolitics, Varathan said. For now, the Iran-Israel conflict is likely to drown out Fed nuances as headline-driven instincts for risk repricing will dominate, he said. Front month WTI crude oil futures were 0.1% lower at $75.09 a barrel on Thursday morning in Asia. Brent crude futures were down 0.4% to $76.4 a barrel. However, oil prices remain on an upward trajectory. Crude prices rose nearly 20% in June, with more than half of the gains occurring just this week, said Priyanka Sachdeva, a senior market analyst at Philip Nova, in a note. Investors, however, are still preparing for volatility, Sachdeva said. Bitcoin, viewed as a proxy for risk, was 0.2% higher. Meanwhile, spot gold was last up 0.2% at $3,377.11 a troy ounce. Goldman Sachs research analysts said in a note that the investment bank's global indices of oil shipping rates reflect an increase over the past week as increased risks have lifted rates for Middle East routes. the probability of U.S. military action against Iran appears to be higher than a U.S.-Iran nuclear deal, meaning that oil markets will see elevated prices over the next few months, the Goldman analyst said. Global: Irish Central Bank warns U.S. policy changes could lead to slower growth, higher debt. The central bank forecast a sharp slowdown in growth to 2.7% in 2026 by Paul Hannon. Ireland's economy faces heightened uncertainty as a result of changing U.S. policy that could see its economy grow much more slowly than previously expected, and government tax revenue falls sharply, the country's central bank said. The operations of U.S. businesses account for a big share of Irish economic output, employment, and tax revenue. While they have used Ireland as a low tax base from which to export to the rest of Europe, many also sell a big share of their production to the U.S. In its quarterly outlook, the central bank said the rise in U.S. tariffs announced in early April would have a significant impact on economic growth over coming years, although it likely wouldn't push Ireland into a lengthy contraction. Ireland is experiencing and can be expected to further experience the fallout from changing geoeconomic relations and priorities, said Robert Kelly, director of economic at the Central Bank of Ireland. Irish exports to the U.S. surged in the first quarter as businesses were built stockpiles in anticipation of a rise in tariffs. As a result, the Irish economy grew by 9.7% in the 3 months through March, far outpacing other rich countries. Largely as a result of the jump in output, the central bank raised its forecast for growth in gross domestic product during 2025 to 9.7% from 4%, but it said it expected a decline in exports in the 3 months through September that would be symmetrical to the rise in the first 3 months of the year as U.S. businesses drew on their stockpiles. So large was the pickup in Irish growth during the first quarter that it lifted the Eurozone as a whole, helping it to grow at its fastest pace in almost 3 years. A decline in GDP in one or two of the coming quarters would dampen Eurozone growth. The central bank said the jump in growth during the first quarter was also driven by a rise in demand for new weight loss and diabetes drugs that is likely to be sustained over coming years and wasn't related to anticipated tariff increases. Assuming that new U.S. tariffs on imports of most goods from the European Union rise to 20% from July, the central bank forecast a sharp slowdown in growth to 2.7% in 2026, down from its previous forecast of 4%. The U.S. is also considering an increase in tariffs on imports of pharmaceuticals, which have also so far been exempt, and if they were to be applied, the impact on the Irish economy would be greater. The central bank said the GDP would be 4.2% lower in 2027 than in its baseline forecast. Over recent years, the Irish government has benefited from a surge in tax revenues from U.S. businesses that have moved intellectual property to the country, including big pharmaceutical firms. That has enabled the government to increase spending while running a budget surplus. That could change if the U.S. were to combine tariff hikes with changes in its tax policies to make it less attractive for American businesses to locate in Ireland, the central bank warned. If tax revenue from U.S. businesses were to return to more normal levels, the foreign investment in Ireland fell by 20%. The government could face a budget deficit from 2030 of 4% of gross national income and a sharp rise in its debts. While changes in U.S. policy seem set to have a greater impact on Ireland than many other countries, the central bank said there are measures the government could take to cushion the blow, including increases in investment spending to upgrade the country's infrastructure, and most urgently, providing new housing, which is in chronically short supply. Middle East: why Iran's axis of resistance is missing in action. Militia groups allied with Tehran have mostly stayed out of its war with Israel. By Sudarshan Raghavan and Samar Saeed and Salih al-Baghdadi. For decades, Iran's leaders built up a network of allied militias in the Middle East that shared a hatred of Israel and America to gain regional influence and protect the regime. But as the theocracy is now fighting for its own survival, its allies are missing in action. Lebanon's Hezbollah, once seen as the most powerful in Iran's so-called axis of resistance, hasn't fired a single missile since Israel attacked Iran. Its military capabilities and leadership have been decimated by Israeli forces over the past year. Hamas, the Palestinian militant group, is a shadow of itself after 20 months of war with Israel that has seen its leaders killed and Gaza destroyed. In Iraq, Iranian-backed Shiite militias haven't targeted U.S. military bases as they have in the past. And Yemen's Houthi militia fired several missiles at Israel on Sunday, but have remained silent since. The bruising wars have left Iran's allies wary of taking on Israel, which has demonstrated vastly superior military and intelligence capabilities. Some are now focused on their own interests and have a lot to lose from an expanding war, such as Iraq's militia members who are now making fortunes in the oil sector. Others, like Hezbollah, are trying to rebuild and nursing grievances over the lack of support from Tehran during the group's war with Israel, according to Arab diplomats who speak to the group regularly. For all these networks right now, it's about survival, said Renan Mansour, a senior fellow and Iraq Initiative project director at Chatham House, a London-based think tank. They all understand the wrath of these types of military campaigns. Nevertheless, those calculations are likely to change for some of Iran's allied militias if the U.S. joins Israel in bombing Iran, say diplomats and analysts. The prospect of the U.S. fueling another Middle East war is all but certain to stir anti-American anger, prompt a violent response and solidarity with Iran across the Muslim world. The case for self-preservation follows years of steady decline in Iran's power in the Middle East, culminating in Israel's massive assault last Friday. In January 2020, a U.S. drone strike killed General Qasem Soleimani, widely seen as Iran's second most powerful man after Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. Soleimani was in charge of Iran's support to its regional allies. The eruption of conflict following the October 7, 2023 attacks by Hamas that left around 1,200 dead and 250 taken hostage touched off a string of blows to Iran, and as Israel systematically targeted Hamas and Hezbollah, Iran did little to help either militia confront Israel on the battlefield. In late 2023 and last year, Israeli airstrikes killed top Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps commanders in the Syrian capital of Damascus, hobbling Iran's command and control in Syria. Iran didn't order its allied militias in Iraq to help fight off a rebel offensive that toppled Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad in December, eventually pulling its forces out and ending a decade of Iranian influence. Many of them question if this is the time for resistance or whether it's the time to keep your head down and try to stay out of this conflict, said Mansour, referring to Iran's allied militias. The Israeli attacks have weakened and humiliated Tehran, striking nuclear facilities, weapon systems, oil and energy infrastructure, as well as government and military leaders. But what has particularly shaken Iran's allies is that the attacks have shown how thoroughly Israel's intelligence has infiltrated Iran. Israel was able to attack Iran with drones from inside the country and has had targeting information on many of Tehran's top military and intelligence figures. I imagine it's been very shocking to the Houthis to see quite how far Iran is deeply penetrated by intelligence, said Elizabeth Kendall, a Middle East expert and head of the University of Cambridge's Girton College. They'll probably be thinking that we should lie fairly low at the moment. We start maneuvering around, we give ourselves away, we reveal our locations. In Iraq, Shiite militia leaders have become careful with their use of technology. They use burner phones and frequently change their numbers. They are seldom online. They are all terrified of Israel, said Mansour. Hezbollah has publicly condemned Israel's strikes on Iran. A person familiar with Hezbollah's thinking said Iran is capable of handling the confrontation without assistance from allies, adding that the group is in a wait-and-see mode. The group also has had little appetite for getting dragged into another war, according to Arab diplomats who speak regularly with the group. For now, Hezbollah wants to focus on rebuilding their capabilities and finances, the diplomats said. There are also signs that there are lingering tensions over the lack of support the group got when it was fighting with Israel. A day before Israel launched its attack, Hezbollah leader Naim Qassem represented himself as a Lebanese political figure in a televised interview. There were no Iranian flags or photos of Khomeini displayed in his office, suggesting a subtle shift away from Iran and a focus on the Lebanese roots. After Israel detonated the pagers of Hezbollah members and killed the group's leaders, Hassan Nasrallah, some members felt Iran had done little to protect the group, the diplomats said. Some Hezbollah figures blamed the intelligence failures in part on the Islamic Revolutionary Guard. In Iraq, home to dozens of Iranian-backed Shiite militias, only one group has issued a statement. Kateb Hezbollah said on Sunday that Iran doesn't need its military assistance to deter Israel, but if the U.S. joins the war, it will target U.S. assets across the region. According to Arab diplomats, Iraqi Prime Minister Mohammed al-Sudani is pressuring militia leaders to stay out of the conflict and avoid sensational provocative rhetoric. The focus for Iraq's militias has also shifted. Many militia leaders have entered the government, where they have access to government contracts and Iraq's lucrative oil economy. While many remain loyal to Iran, they are making decisions based on self-interest. They've been sort of benefiting from Iraq's stability in a way, and with the high oil prices to develop economic empires, said Mansour. As for the Houthis, despite their public rhetoric and slogan that calls for death to America and Israel, the group has never been entirely beholden to Iran. The Houthis' arsenal of missiles and drones have also been significantly degraded by weeks of U.S. airstrikes in March and April. It's a Houthi-first policy, said Kendall. They're not going to put their own necks on the line for the supreme leader. They're going to figure out what's actually best for them. Other analysts say the Houthis are waiting for the right time to join the war, and that they might be holding back while Tehran gives priority to a diplomatic resolution. The Houthis remain in close coordination with Iran, and their limited involvement in the ongoing Iran-Israel conflict appears to be calculated, said Aman Naghi, a senior analyst on Yemen for the International Crisis Group. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org/broadcast info and audio/on demand. On the clock, Americans are side hustling like we're in a recession. The two-job trend these days is about necessity, not pursuing a passion, by Colm Borchers. Does your friend with a second job know something you don't? The share of working Americans holding down multiple jobs rose to between 5.3% and 5.5% during the first 5 months of the year. That's a range we haven't seen since the recession of the aughts, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Granted, almost anything from Lady Gaga to men's underwear can supposedly be a recession indicator. Leave the forecasting to influencers and economists. Whether an increase in second jobs portends a recession is only half the point. People are side hustling like we are already in one. It's a testament to our collective unease and further evidence that careers will look very different than they used to. Holding one job at a time is on the way to becoming antiquated or a luxury for emerging generations. Roughly 4 in 10 millennials and Gen Zers have side jobs, according to new research by Deloitte. Elizabeth Faber, Deloitte's Global Chief People and Purpose Officer, said it's notable that the share of millennials working two jobs has been virtually unchanged for several years. People typically have less needs for side hustles as they advance in their careers, but it isn't playing out that way for a group already scarred by two recessions. Those juggling more than one job say they are bracing for a potential downturn by padding their finances while they can. They are also ensuring they'll still have a source of income in the event of a layoff or diminished earnings. I just started thinking, well, a recession might be coming. Maybe it's time to diversify, said Marie Incantera, who launched a cleaning business 6 months ago to supplement her main job as owner of a small public relations agency in New York. She has grown her PR shop to two employees and several freelancers over a decade in business, and she earns enough to live comfortably in Manhattan. But Incantera, 39 years old, knows her services could be one of the first things clients eliminate if they need to cut costs. After researching businesses that seemed dull but reliable, laundromats, car washes, vending machines, she settled on cleaning because of low startup costs. She and a business partner book commercial and residential cleaning assignments and deploy gig workers to do the scrubbing, occasional filling in when someone no-shows. Take a humble pill. What's most striking about Incantera's choice of side hustle is she had a cooler option. Before going into PR, she was a professional jazz musician. She could play the dive bar circuit for extra cash, but decided to be practical. The story of second jobs in this moment isn't only about how many people are taking additional work, but also about what they are picking. In the past, we saw that many side hustles were driven by passion, but right now they're very much driven by necessity, says Priya Rathold, a spokeswoman for a job search site Indeed. In a recent Indeed survey, 52% of respondents said they have side hustles that make ends meet, much higher than the Labor Department's figure. Rathold said that could be because the poll includes people who don't have two steady jobs, but occasionally drive for DoorDash or pick up freelance projects on Fiverr. Dinah Kringbaum works 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. as a development coordinator at a real estate firm in Arizona. She started nannying on nights and weekends this year. She makes enough at her day job to pay her bills, but isn't willing to risk living paycheck to paycheck in the current economy. The roughly $800 a month she earns as a nanny is a safety net. Kraybaum, 30, used to babysit when she was a teenager. Now that she has a college degree, a white-collar career, and a child of her own, watching other people's kids feels a bit like going backward. But it's a rare side hustle that checks three critical boxes. It pays well, fits around her primary job, and allows her to bring her son to work. One minute I'm meeting with consultants and investors, and the next I'm talking to a two-year-old, she says. Sometimes you just have to take a humble pill because you know it's the best thing for you. New normal. On a sunny afternoon last month, students at the University of California, Irvine, pitched tents and business ideas on a campus green. It wasn't another Shark Tank-style contest for founders trying to build billion-dollar startups. Instead, the event was billed as a side hustle challenge and featured cookies, homemade sweatshirts, and eyebrow threading. Miriam Garg, a venture consultant to UC Irvine's Entrepreneurship Center, says more colleges are preparing students for a world that may require them to work a second job. And it's often something completely different from what they're studying, she says. Alexa Gaxolia's degree is in business marketing, which she uses in her day job as a sales assistant and social media coordinator at an aerospace manufacturer in California. Her night job as a club DJ could hardly be further removed. Gaxolia, 26, says practically everyone in her social circle works more than one job. And if I know someone that has only one job, they're working overtime, she says. It's a survival thing. Her mix of a fun job and a staid one reminds me of how Hall of Fame baseball players once sold insurance or cars in the off-season. Recession or not, we may be headed back to a time when two jobs are the norm. You're listening to the Wall Street Journal on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I am your volunteer broadcaster, Cicely Tiernan. If you miss any part of this program, you can get it on demand on our website at sunsounds.org, then click on Broadcast Info and Audio. Now back to our next article. Opinion Commentary, Juneteenth and the Power of an Ink and Paper Proclamation. Americans Celebrate an Imperfect Path Toward a More Perfect Union, by Lucas E. Morrill and Jonathan W. White. Juneteenth joined Independence Day as a federal holiday in 2021, celebrating the day the Emancipation Proclamation freed slaves in the outer reaches of rebel-held territory. Critics of Lincoln's proclamation, now as then, say it was ineffective because it took so long to be enforced. Yet Frederick Douglass, who devoted his life to freedom for Black Americans, understood that paper declarations sowed the seeds of a more perfect union. On June 19, 1865, Major General Gordon Granger declared at Galveston, Texas, that all slaves are free by virtue of Lincoln's edict dated January 1, 1863. It took more than 2 years to make the promise of freedom a reality. Douglass fought to bring that promise to life. He drew Lincoln's proclamation had to be made iron, lead, and fire by enforcement. Without the enlistment of Black men to fight in the Union Army, Douglass said, the proclamation, good as it is, will be worthless, a miserable mockery. To emancipate Black men but prohibit them from defending their country would betray the equality that justified their freedom. Douglass nonetheless treasured Lincoln's paper proclamation, reminding its critics that our own Declaration of Independence was at one time but ink and paper. In this way, Independence Day is similar to Juneteenth. Both celebrate a commitment to liberty, whose fruition took time. Douglass further argued that paper orders carry with them a certain moral force, which makes them, in a large measure, self-executing. The president had pledged to recognize and maintain the freedom of said persons and not to repress them in any efforts they may make for their actual freedom. Douglass believed the proclamation from America's commander-in-chief would act on the rebel masters and even more powerfully upon their slaves. It would leave the slaves to run away. Those who escaped bondage and once feared the claws of the Fugitive Slave Act would have the law on their side. Although Douglass disagreed with Lincoln about the timing and rationale of emancipation, he predicted that Lincoln's proclamation would stand as the greatest event of our nation's history, if not the greatest event of the century, placing the North on the side of justice and civilization and the rebels on the side of robbery and barbarism. Douglass and Lincoln alike clearly took inspiration from the Declaration of Independence, America's first Emancipation Proclamation. Both were committed to realizing the promises of 1776, nearly a century later. Juneteenth and Independence Day honor the struggle of an imperfect people on an imperfect path to freedom and equality. American history, a heap of Juneteenths, in the words of Ralph Ellison, can be read as one journey full of setbacks and triumphs toward realizing the truth of the Declaration of Independence, then ink and paper proclamation, nearly 250 years old, established a way of life that remains, in Lincoln's words, the last best hope of earth. The biggest companies across America are cutting their workforces. It isn't just Amazon. There's a growing belief that having too many employees will slow a company down and that anyone still on the payroll could be working harder, by Chip Cutter and Lauren Weber. Corporate America is convinced fewer employees means faster growth. U.S. public companies have reduced their white-collar workforces by a collective 3.5% over the past 3 years, according to employment data provider Live Data Technologies. Over the past decade, one in five companies in the S&P 500 have shrunk. The cuts go beyond typical cost trimming and speak to a broader shift in philosophy. Adding talent, once a sign of surging sales and confidence in the future, now means leaders must be doing something wrong. New technologies like generative artificial intelligence are allowing companies to do more with less. But there's more of this movement from Amazon in Seattle to Bank of America in Charlotte, North Carolina, and at companies big and small everywhere in between, there's a growing belief that having too many employees is itself an impediment. The message from many bosses, anyone still on the payroll could be working harder. In a note to employees on Tuesday, Amazon chief executive Andy Jassy wrote that the once-in-a-lifetime rise of AI will eliminate the need for certain jobs in the next few years. And earlier this year, he told his staff that not every new project requires 50 people to do it. The best leaders, he added in his annual letter to shareholders, get the most done with the least number of resources required to do the job. Procter & Gamble said this month that it would cut 7,000 jobs, or 15% of its non-manufacturing workforce, to create broader roles and smaller teams. Estee Lauder and dating app operator Match Group recently said that they had each jettisoned around 20% of their managers. Microsoft, meanwhile, plans to lay off thousands of employees in its sales department and other teams in the coming weeks as it looks to thin out its ranks. Flatter is faster, Hewlett-Packard's enterprise finance chief Marie Myers told investors this month as she discussed recent staff cuts. With fewer than 59,000 employees, HPE is at its smallest size since it became an independent company a decade ago, she pointed out. All of the shrinking takes turns on its head, the usual cycle of hiring and firing. Companies often let go of workers in recessions, then staff up when the economy picks up. Yet the workforce cuts in recent years coincide with a surge in sales and profits, heralding a more fundamental shift in the way leaders evaluate their workforces. U.S. corporate profits rose to a record high at the end of last year, according to the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis. Everyone with 500 employees and up that I talk to, off the record, including public companies, says, I don't need 30 to 40% of my team, tech investor and former Adobe executive Jason Lemkin said on a venture capital podcast last month. In all, about 1 in 5 S&P 500 companies have fewer employees today in both offices and the field than a decade ago. And it isn't all due to selling or spinning off some operations, according to a Wall Street Journal analysis of public filings. That includes bellwether names such as Walmart, General Motors, and Bank of America, whose sales have all climbed over that time. As some in corporate America got leaner, the U.S. workforce as a whole still grew over the past decade as the healthcare sector expanded and the ranks of government workers increased. Managers on the chopping block. The downsizing has caused employees to rapidly lose the leverage they enjoyed during the pandemic when jobs were plentiful and companies were bidding up for white-collar talent. Even with AI advances on the horizon, many corporate leaders and labor economists have projected long-term shortages in both salaried and hourly jobs. Now workers are contending with bigger workloads, more responsibilities, and a nagging fear about their job security and future prospects. Employees are too nervous to make moves. Misha Fisher, an economist at education platform Udemy, wrote in an analysis of the latest U.S. jobs report. This freeze is blocking normal opportunity flow. Early career workers can't break in, experienced workers can't move up, and burned-out employees stay put. Managers have an especially ripe target for cutting. The Live Data Technologies data show public companies have pared back their non-managerial ranks recently, too. The number of managers dropped 6.1% between May 2022 to May 2025, executive-level roles fell 4.6%. When Brian Monahan became CEO of Bank of America in 2010, the company employed 285,000 people. The bank closed branches, digitized more processes, and didn't replace people when they quit. In recent years, it cut its management layers from about 7 to 13. Today, it has about 213,000 employees, and revenues are up 18% from a decade ago. We have a higher producing company with fewer people and lower costs, Moynihan told investors in April. Companies flattening has left managers leading larger teams. In 2020, managers had an average 4.2 direct reports, according to Lattice, a human resources software provider. By 2023, that number was 5.1. They have delayered to the point of making the companies anorexic, said Joseph Fuller, a management professor at Harvard Business School. That can backfire and eventually hurt employees' productivity, he added. Their ability to do deep work and really focus goes down consistently because they're endlessly distracted and now they're doing the work that three people did 10 years ago. Yet revenue per employee is back in favor as a metric investors and executives track carefully. Among bosses watching it closely is Grindr CEO George Arison. When he took the helm of the dating app in 2022, it made about $1 million in revenue per employee. Within 2 years, that figure more than doubled. Grindr kept the pace of hiring below its internal projections, rolled out new productivity tools, and leaned on existing staff to do more. I was pretty clear that people are not working as much as they need to, Arison said. Others are now urging their teams to do more with the same resources. We're going to launch 10 products, Stefan Bancel, CEO of COVID vaccine maker Moderna, said at an investor conference in late May. The challenge I have for our team is, how do we launch those 10 products without adding headcount? Agents of change. Generative AI is already allowing executives to imagine a future with even fewer workers. CEOs at both e-commerce platform Shopify and foreign language learning app Duolingo recently told their teams that future hiring would be predicated on first showing the work couldn't be automated. Duolingo's CEO softened the message after a social media uproar over his memo, clarifying that his company was still hiring at the same speed as before. When Lattice wanted to add a payroll function to its line of HR software products, executives calculated they would need 40 or 50 new staff since customers' pay issues often require immediate attention. Ultimately, Lattice added fewer than 10 people, CEO Sarah Franklin said, because current AI models are so much more sophisticated than chatbots from just a year or two ago. They can take bespoke requests, bespoke querying, and match them to give you an answer, she said. That's what we as humans do. Many companies are moving toward using more agentic AI, autonomous bots that can make decisions and complete tasks on behalf of humans, such as paying an invoice or rerouting inventory if a natural disaster interferes with a trucking route. Walmart is deploying such AI agents to shorten the timeline for producing in-house apparel by up to 18 weeks. The retailer already employs 100,000 fewer people than a decade ago, its filings show. It sold operations in Brazil, the UK, and other countries during that time, but that is only part of the story. Technical innovations have also helped its revenues rise despite the lower headcount, and it has invested heavily in its e-commerce business, which is growing quickly and relies partly on freelance drivers who don't show up in the retailer's headcount data. In 2024, Walmart recorded $681 billion in sales, an increase of 40% compared with 2014. Many of today's jobs didn't exist just a few years ago, and we expect the pace of change to continue, Donna Morris, Walmart's chief people officer, said in a statement. In his note to Amazon employees Tuesday, Jassy said that generative AI and agents are growing increasingly capable. He said the company has already rolled out or is building more than 1,000 agents and predicted that AI agents will speed up the pace of innovation by taking care of rote work. Agents will allow us to start almost everything from a more advanced starting point, he said. 5 employees, $50 million in revenue. The leaner, meaner approach is trickling down to even the smallest startups. Jolie, which sets high-end filtered shower heads, is on track to make about $50 million in revenue this year. It has 5 employees. CEO Ryan Babenzine, who previously sold a sneaker brand to Steve Madden, said he never considered headcount as a sign of success. Jolie operates with such a lean team, which include Babenzine's co-founder, Arjun Singh, along with employees focused on sales, marketing, and social media, by relying on digital tools and part-time contractors for some finance, operations, and logistics functions. Hiring is not necessarily like it used to be, Babazin said. 10 years ago, it would be really difficult to build a $50 million business with five or less people. Today, I think it's going to be really, really common. Babazin hopes to double the company's revenue to $100 million in the next few years. He estimates the company could do that by bringing on two more people. Policy: MAGA brawls over prospect of Trump joining strikes on Iran. The White House has quietly reached out to MAGA influencers to quell any backlash. By Alex Leary, Tarini Party, and Lindsay Wise. President Trump's political base is splintering over the prospect that the U.S. could join Israel's assault on Iran, and the White House is trying to quell the backlash. In recent days, White House officials have quietly reached out to MAGA influencers, according to people familiar with the matter, aiming to explain Trump's possible shift away from a diplomatic solution. Some prominent conservatives have toned down their rhetoric, but discontent has continued to burst into public view, as longtime Trump supporters voice concerns that the president is abandoning his campaign trail pledge to extract the U.S. from foreign entanglements. The fierce debate unfolding online across conservative media and on Capitol Hill has pitted the more isolationist wing of Trump's coalition against hawkish Republicans who have called on the president to step in to ensure Iran doesn't develop a nuclear weapon. It marks the strongest challenge to Trump's iron grip on the Republican Party since he regained power in January. And it comes as Trump's base is also divided over immigration, with the administration wavering over whether to exempt farm and service workers from deportations to insulate the economy. Some of the sharpest objections over Iran have come from avid Trump allies, such as Republican Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia. Anyone slobbering for the U.S. to become fully involved in the Israel-Iran war is not America First MAGA, she wrote on X. Appearing on former Republican Representative Matt Gaetz's television show, Green said, "A Middle Eastern war will pull America back 20 years. Gaetz, a Trump ally, said in an interview that he believed Trump wouldn't drag the U.S. into a prolonged conflict, but he added, "President Trump rescued the Republican Party from a doom of neoconservatism. I think it's a fair question to ask those folks who want to entangle themselves in an Iranian war. What's your plan for the day after?" Conservative activist Charlie Kirk was among those who heard from the White House, according to the people familiar with the outreach. As Israel prepared to attack Iran last week, Kirk polled supporters about whether the U.S. should get involved. Nearly 90% said no. In recent days, as Trump has moved closer to military action, Kirk urged his 5 million followers to have faith in the president's ability to handle the crisis. "His whole life has led to this moment," Kirk wrote Monday on X. He has also said at times echoed White House messaging and defended the president, arguing that Trump is trying to make sure Iran doesn't get a nuclear weapon. "It's totally false to say that Trump ever wanted regime change," Kirk wrote on social media. Trump is under pressure to launch U.S. strikes on Iran from allies such as Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican South Carolina, and Fox News host Mark Levin, who said on his show this week, "This is good versus evil. You're either a patriotic American who's going to get behind the President of the United States, the Commander-in-Chief, or you're not." Levin has been publicly fighting with Tucker Carlson, the former Fox personality, who, after Israel began its strikes, accused Trump of being complicit in the act of war. Trump hit back on social media, saying, "Somebody please explain to kooky Tucker Carlson that Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon." Vice President J.D. Vance jumped in to defend Trump against what he called a lot of crazy stuff on social media. He said, "People are right to be worried about foreign entanglements after the last 25 years of idiotic foreign policy, but I believe the president has earned some trust on this issue." Steve Bannon, a leading conservative podcast host, who opposes military intervention, said Wednesday that Trump needs to articulate his views, not just to MAGA, but to the American people, of why we would get involved in another war over there as a combatant. He called on supporters to pray for Trump, and he predicted that the MAGA movement wouldn't fully splinter over Iran. We don't like it, maybe we hate it, but you know, we'll get on board, he said. That is the view inside the White House as well, where red MAGA-style hats on desks read, Trump was right about everything. White House aides argued Trump can manage the crisis and his supporters will come around. Trump has built a broad coalition and disagreements have flared up before, over tariffs, for instance, but his supporters have largely stood behind him. America First has never meant America only, never meant isolationism, and there are people who are part of the MAGA base who are isolationist. I understand that, so it's complicated, said Senator Kevin Cramer, Republican, North Dakota, but I have no doubt Donald Trump will do what he thinks is best. White House spokeswoman Abigail Jackson said Trump has never wavered in his stance that Iran cannot obtain a nuclear weapon and repeated that promise to the American people since his victorious campaign. Trump conceded Wednesday that opinions on U.S. involvement in Iran are mixed, but insisted, "My supporters are more in love with me today than they were even at the election." Military action on Iran isn't the only issue that has threatened to divide the president's coalition. The administration's short-lived guidance to exempt workers in key industries from deportation also triggered deep frustration among allies of the president who have advocated for stringent immigration restrictions. After facing backlash from supporters, including inside the White House, the administration said there was no longer blanket guidance pausing immigration raids at farms, hotels, and restaurants. Asked if some exemptions would stay in place, Trump said Tuesday, everyone is being looked at. He also called for an expansion of ICE operations in Democrat-controlled cities such as Los Angeles, New York, and Chicago. But some of the president's backers said the damage to his immigration agenda has already been done because of the possibility of exemptions muddied the administration's message. It's guaranteed to sabotage any efforts at self-deportation, said Mark Krikorian, executive director for the Center for Immigration Studies, a group favoring immigration restrictions. It also increases the incentives to come illegally because you've heard they aren't going after restaurant employees anymore. Rosemary Jenkins, co-founder of the Immigration Accountability Project, said there was widespread disappointment with Trump siding with businesses over his backers on deportations. It's essentially an amnesty for the employers, Jenks said. Even before the recent back and forth on exemptions for certain industries, many Trump allies were already frustrated with the slow pace of deportations. Some have been privately concerned for months that the president was watering down his campaign trail pledge to oversee the largest mass deportations in American history. While the president remains focused on immediately removing dangerous criminal illegal aliens from the country, including those given safe harbor and Democrat-run sanctuary cities, anyone who is here illegally is liable to be deported, said Jackson, the White House spokeswoman. National security exclusive. Trump privately approved of attack plans for Iran, but has withheld final order. The president is hoping that threatening to join Israel's strikes will lead Tehran to abandon its nuclear program. By Alexander Ward, Laura Seligman, and Michael R. Gordon. President Trump told senior aides late Tuesday that he approved of attack plans for Iran, but was holding off on giving the final order to see if Tehran would abandon its nuclear program, three people familiar with the deliberations said. Since his private instructions in the White House Situation Room to the military, Trump has disclosed publicly that an attack plan is an option. I have ideas on what to do, but I haven't made a final. I like to make the final decision 1 second before it's due, he told reporters Wednesday. Trump is hoping that threatening to join Israel's strikes on Iran, which continue for a 6-day, will compel Tehran to meet his demands, the people said. He acknowledged that a U.S. attack was under consideration, but said he might still decide against it. A senior White House official said multiple options remain on the table, and that Trump would continue to watch how the Israelis operate. Israel began its airstrikes against Iran's nuclear infrastructure, military leadership, and other targets last week, dubbing the mission Operation Rising Lion. The Israeli military has struck more than 1,100 targets in Iran, including 8 Iranian attack helicopters at a military base and 40 missile infrastructure components in western Iran on Tuesday. At the Pentagon, officials said the administration was considering options for conducting an attack on Iran, but the president hadn't given a final order. So far, the U.S. has limited its military role to assisting Israel in defending against Iranian missiles and drones, officials say. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth and Joint Chiefs of Staff Chair General Dan Kane attended a meeting at the White House on Wednesday afternoon after testifying on Capitol Hill in the morning, according to a defense official. While planning for a potential strike has progressed, Trump might prefer to resolve the crisis diplomatically, people familiar with his thinking said. I may do it, I may not, he also told reporters Wednesday, repeating his demand for Iran's unconditional surrender. The next week is going to be very big, maybe less than a week. Iran's government said it wouldn't negotiate under military threat and would retaliate if attacked. Iran does not negotiate under duress, shall not accept peace under duress, and certainly not with a has-been warmonger clinging to relevance, it said in a statement issued by Iran's United Nations mission, apparently referring to Trump. Iran's well-defended Fordo uranium enrichment facility is a possible U.S. target. Israel has yet to attack the facility, which is buried under a mountain and is generally considered by military experts to be out of reach of all but the most powerful bombs. And that's all we have time for today. That brings us to the end of today's edition of the Wall Street Journal. I'm Cicely Tiernan, your volunteer broadcaster on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Stay tuned for more interesting programs on Sun Sounds.